Hi, and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, or the Let's Chat podcast. Did you know you could do street epistemology in France? Well, I didn't. Not until the end of this show, where we actually had someone from France come in and tell us about how they're preparing to do that method in the land of baguettes. Come join us for a chat. It's going to be really fun.
Welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is October 20th, and if it's not where you're listening, then you're listening to a rebroadcast of the show. You should not be trying to call in. I am Dotter 5, and as usual, we have Wombat with us on the phone. Say hello, Wombat.
Hello, Wombat! It's a new week, a new chance to live and love and laugh. Let's be happy together. No, I'm sad now. Oh, it's all gone. I spent all my energy. What happened?
Enthusiastic as usual. And we have today guest Bob from France and the Dread Pirates. Say hello, guys.
Hello, hi, everybody. Guys.
Hey. excuse me. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville or East Tennessee, for that matter, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and you can find them by going to knoxvilleatheist.org. Also, did you know that there's been an atheist call-in television show broadcasting right here in Knoxville and has been for 9 years now? Did you know that, Wombat?
I think it's okay. I think it's just okay. It's a pleasant. Okay. Yeah, it's not as good as the first one. Like when the first Lego movie came out, I was like, oh my gosh, I have no idea what to expect. But now when this came out, I'm movie. Like, as a sequel, it's okay. It's just okay. There's a lot of music and then I'm like, I don't really feel it.
I'm beginning to think you don't know how to use a TV.
I'm beginning to think you don't appreciate good American movies. I just,
it's a TV show. And you can watch it on Comcast Channel 12 every Wednesday night at 6:30. Matter of fact, it should be going on right now. But we hope you'll TiVo it and come back to it later so you can listen to our show here. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there. And you can hear some of them right here on this program and generally on the station as we are in rotation. Wombat, what you got for us today?
Hey, we have a good couple of friends with us today. Of course, we have Dread Pirate all the way from Canada, but we also have a new guest, Bob, from France. He's calling in directly from France. Bob, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. I would throw out my first grade French right now, but I'm afraid I don't have any words.
No words at all.
No words at all.
Bonjour, comment ça va?
Yeah, there we go. Canada, Quebec, help me out. Help me out.
We French people know how to do things there.
There you go.
So, exactly.
I took 2 years of French, but I couldn't remember anything. It's been like 50 years ago.
Yeah, I also heard it. It was really, really hot in France a while back ago. I hope everything's going well over there. But so, Bob, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and then what you'd like to talk about during the show today?
Yeah, sure. So I'm from France. I'm actually from Strasbourg. Don't know if you heard about it. It's a
Strasbourg?
Small town. Yeah.
That's my mother's last name.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, that's my maiden name. Yeah.
Wow.
What a coincidence. Okay, so so Strasbourg is on the border with Germany, so it's in the northeast. And so I was a student in computer science before, and I started a PhD in computer science. And so I learned a lot about scientific method and so on. And actually, I liked it a lot, and I decided I wanted to study that indeed and not computer science anymore.
Wow!
And so therefore, I started this year a master's degree in education.
Oh, very cool.
And so that's when I learned about street epistemology, actually. So I never heard about it. Like, I just found out like 2 months ago, and I really got into it. And I want to study it maybe on a more scientific perspective.
Ooh, I love this. I love it. Yeah, that's really cool. So it sounds like a love for science basically changed your entire life and the course of the direction that you're going in. You went.
Yeah, exactly.
There was such a lucrative career in software engineering. But
Yeah, but, I know. Yeah, I just took a risk.
Took a risk. You can always go back. It's all good. See. Yeah, it's all good. Yeah. So what is it about street epistemology that particularly makes you think that you can target it scientifically or something that's worth that endeavor?
Well, actually, so I've always been fascinated with how people study their beliefs. How do they know things? And I always found that it was hard to change their minds, of course. So there was this impossible, exactly.
Uh-huh. Right? Yep.
There was this big election in France 2 years ago, and I was really invested in it. And I tried to change people's mind, and it didn't work because you can't do it like that. And when I learned about street epistemology, I thought maybe, wow, that's great. That's a new way to help people assess their beliefs. And so there might be something really efficient in that. I don't know.
You might help people change their own minds rather than you try to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Looks like a great method. And of course, so then I read a lot of literature on that. So I read Pete Boghossian's books.
Oh yeah, Peter Boghossian.
Peter Boghossian. Yeah,
right.
I really loved that. And I thought, well, maybe we have to try that in France too and see how it works.
Yeah. So what would you think it would be some of the initial challenges? And I'd like to do it like a roundtable on like what our interests are with regard to SE in Europe and what our particular experiences have been. But what challenges do you foresee in France doing like an SE style kind of conversation? Like what's the kind of climate there religiously or politically or whatever?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'd say that there is something in France compared to Americans. It's like French don't really like to talk about their beliefs. I don't know how you see it in America. But,
he's saying Americans are opinionated.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. But when I see the videos of street epistemology, like on Let's Chat and so on, I'm always surprised by how much they talk compared to us in French.
It's true. Well, I think that could just be a Kentucky thing. That could just
okay.
Five, what do you think? What do you think? Is it? Have you met a lot of I would say loquacious interlocutors or talky people when you do your table sessions?
Oh, sorry. Were you talking
five?
To me?
Doubt or five? Do you?
Oh, what?
Do you meet a lot of talkative people when you do your stuff? Would you
say Well, whenever they sit down, they're talky. I mean, they can, do I meet a lot of them?
Yeah.
When I first started doing it, I met more than I do now. I'm talking about specifically at the University of Tennessee. The first day I tried it, I sat down for a couple hours and got about five people.
Wow, that's not bad.
Now I usually get a couple in 2 hours, but they usually stay and talk for a while.
Right.
So the answer, I guess, would be yes, they do tend to talk. I did, the University of Tennessee was closed for fall break last Friday, so I went to a local park, which was Victor Ash Park.
Okay.
And a guy came up and talked to me for an hour.
Wow, that's a long time.
That was a long time. But I really wasn't doing SE at the time. You know, I don't generally do it the way you do. I'm more an argumentative type.
But you sprinkle it in, right?
I do. That's, I do sprinkle it in. It's very cool. Good. Matter of fact, I use it as kind of a second approach. If I'm not making much headway arguing, I'll switch over to SE. I just like to argue.
And listen, there's nothing wrong if you like to argue. I think it's just, I think of SE as an ingredient that you can put into a mix. And I really value that because even when I do my style, it's a lot of like body language reading. It's like incidental stories. It's really just a conversation that I'm trying to have.
Sure.
And SE is more of just how I'm going to ask a question rather than. Yeah.
One of the things I notice on your talks is you usually use a timer of some kind, and when the timer's up, the conversation's over. Do you find that counterproductive? Or do people generally want to stay a little longer or not?
Oh, that's a great point. So when I use my timer, it's really just a sign to show that I'm not trying to waste the person's time. It's hard to get someone to sit down for an hour long conversation. But if you say, hey, I only want to talk to you for 5 minutes and I mean it, here's a 5 minute timer. And if you want to keep talking, I'm fine with it. But I'm just showing, hey, this is a way for both of us to keep track of our promise. And most people don't end that 5 minutes. Though if it gets, if I get straight to the God belief in like that period of time, then we'll be like, oh, our time's almost up. You'll hear stuff like that. But I've learned how to avoid that and take my time a little bit. So,
right. Yeah. That might be a good idea, too. Because I've had conversations that I would like to have had a timer run out on.
Oh, yeah. The reverse is true. If I am talking to someone that I don't feel like I'm having a productive conversation with, it does help to have that timer on the table and be like, okay, and that's our time. I appreciate it. And reach over and shake hands. Drip Pirate, what do you think? Do you find people pretty talky? And do you have a timer when you go out to do your conversations?
I don't have a timer because most of my conversations are prearranged. You know, I know that someone's interested in sitting down and having chats over coffee. Like I said before, you know, being in a small town and being, you know, sort of who I am in the community, people know me and they know what I'm up to. So the expectation is already there that we're in it for at least half an hour. So and nobody minds that.
Cool. Yeah. And I think I think the name of the show itself kind of expresses how long it'll talk. Right. Like once the coffee's gone.
Oh yeah,
that's right. This isn't an espresso shot. Right?
Yeah.
So oops, my coffee is empty.
Yeah.
I guess it's time to go.
that's the timer there.
Yeah. Would you have you found that the people that you've talked to have been pretty talky or talkative? Is it easy for them to get their opinions out, or is it like a mixed bag in Canada?
That varies upon the person.
Hmm.
You know, and sometimes people are kind of cautious. They want to get a sense of, okay, well, how deep are we going? Is the pirate here going to be leading the conversation where I'm just answering yes or no? You
sure,
know what I mean?
Yeah. So I hate that.
Once they get a sense that I have, you know, an honest interest in what they have to say, then they tend to lighten up a bit.
T-Bout and Bob, could you mind explaining to me like the nature of the conversations you've had with people before you've tried SE and maybe what your interests are as far as what you hope will change when you start using SE as an approach?
Yeah, sure, no problem. Well, on the religious part, actually, I used to avoid talking about it. Like, I think maybe that might be a French thing, but I'm not sure. But usually we don't talk about that stuff. That's personal. Because, you know, France is atheist. It's a laic country. So legally, it has no religion. And it's one of the countries in Europe where there is the least religious person. Sorry.
Really?
So it's like, so you have like 50% atheists in France.
Wow. I thought that there was like a state church that was Catholic. I thought Catholicism had a very large sway in France.
Oh, no.
No.
No, not at all.
Oh, wow. Okay. And that's something new.
No, they pretty violently kicked out religion at one point.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
When this happened? Because I'm locked in the medieval times.
A little after the American Revolution.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. I got to catch up on my French history because I've only been reading about like the Game of Thrones era, where it's like the church controls everything. It's like, okay, cool, that's awesome. All right, So since then, people just keep it to themselves, more or less.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because so there are lots of actually legislations on this. And for example, when you create an association, do you have that status in the US, an association? I don't know. You know, when you want to start something like a scouts group or something like that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It cannot be religious. That's forbidden.
Ooh. Well, then Boy Scouts wouldn't be allowed, right?
Well, that's, that's a complicated thing. Officially, they are not religious, but,
right.
But they are actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, there is a complete legal separation of church and state.
So then how would you imagine these conversations going before or after SE? It seems like the topics at hand may not necessarily be religious in nature, but you could still have like these same hiccups if you talk about like politics or something, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So politics and also... paranormal stuff, or medium, you know.
Yeah?
I don't know how to call that.
No, it's paranormal, pseudoscience.
Yeah, pseudoscience. Right. Exactly. people are less ashamed of pseudoscience than of religion, actually. Mm. So for that, it's really important. Interesting.
Give me an example of some of the pseudosciences that they're really into. Like, what's the popular trend in France?
So in France, there is homeopathy.
Okay. We have that here. Yeah.
Yeah, we got
okay,
it.
Yeah. It's really, really huge in France. Oh. And they just, this year, they stopped paying, you know, the welfare service, the social services, stopped reimbursing, paying homeopathy back. So this year.
Good.
Yeah. And that made a big noise on the news and so on, because lots of French people are outraged by this.
Wow. We have like...
They want their homeopathy?
Yeah.
Yeah, they want homeopathy. They want
They're outraged that the government stopped wasting their money, their taxpayer money.
Hey, sometimes that happens. Sometimes it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I know there was a state, I forgot which one, and so this is going to sound like a random story, but there was a state that actually cut back its support on lotto. So, like, they basically said, hey, we're not going to rely on the lottery so much, and we're actually going to make it so that you have to be a certain age to do the lottery, like much older than what's typical in other states. And people had complaints about that, because it's like, well, now I won't win the lottery. It's like, you weren't going to win either way. It's like 1 in 2 million. Do you know what that means? You're not going to win? It's like, no.
Yeah.
I guess lottery could be kind of like a pseudoscience in a way, or more of just like a tax on people that didn't catch up on education or maybe were left behind by it. I don't know.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So how would you have these conversations with, like, say, if someone believed in, like, if Dread Pirate believed in, I don't know, take your homeopathic option of choice, how would you approach him with this new FC technique? Or would you... How do you do that up scientifically? Like, what's your approach going to be like?
Well, before I knew about SE, I would just have tried explaining him that homeopathy doesn't work, just like that.
Right.
And of course, he wouldn't change his mind. So that's
what do you do?
Nope.
Yeah. The more dilute, the stronger it is. Come
yeah,
on,
there
give
you
it
go. Yeah, that makes exactly. sense.
But now, well, I tried it a few times, and it's actually much harder than it looks, I found. Because, I would try to only help him understand how does he know that? How does he know it works? And actually, it's hard because I often get off track. We lose the target of the conversation.
So. Sure, that happens a lot. That's very hard to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like when it says treat epistemology, it's very easy to get caught up on the details of someone's conclusion that they have or like something personal that they said and get lost on the target, which is that methodology they use to reach their conclusions. And I think it's a defense mechanism, to be honest with you, for people to
protect those mechanisms, those methods.
Exactly. Yes. To not show that they're weak and use it to divert to literally anything else other than the method that they use to reach their conclusion. And street epistemology is just, you got to focus on just this. You can talk about other things, but keep in mind that if you're going to make any progress, it's going to be when you talk about the methodology, that connection that ties a person with their conclusion. Anything else is just a diversion. So make sure you stay on track. And you can, I guess you can probably take an argumentative approach. I know Doubter 5 loves his arguing, but even if you argued on the methodology, you're still focused on the right thing to talk about.
Yeah,
you know?
True.
Yeah. All right.
I'm sorry, but what do you mean by argumentative approach for SE?
So I think there's a lot of different ways to do SE. I don't think it's just one way. And you can do a jokey kind of way. I know some people are really good at that. Like, objectively, Dan's really good at, like, rapport building with his callers on his show, Truth Wanted. That comes out of Austin, Texas. I have, like, a lot more of a conversational way. Like, if I'm talking about sports or video games with a person, and I try to build up that rapport. I know Reed Nicewonder, who has a YouTube channel, Cordial Curiosity, is much more passive and neutral when he has his conversations. And Larry is a lot more, I'm going to tell you how it is.
You know, I was thinking about Reed, and he's kind of like the Perry Como of SE.
Oh, you're dating yourself. What's that mean? Is that a detective?
No,
that's a musician. Very known for very laid back, kind of like sleepy time tunes, you know?
Yeah, I would say Reed has, like, the best neutral style of SE. Like, if you want to see, like, the most neutral form of it without, like, it being biased by, like a considerable personality, like, he has, like, the most definitive style. And then when he's offline, he's very much in that same, like, passive kind of way. Like, he has, like, a very calm demeanor about him. I like that.
Okay.
But yeah, so you can do it argumentative, you can do it nice, you can do it joking. There's a lot of different ways to do it. And I think as long, and me, SE's not like the approach style. It's more of like what you're targeting with your questions. And if you're targeting the epistemology, that's the goal. Like, you want to make sure you keep your focus on that methodology. Let's see. So, hey, how about this? T-Bow. Bob.
Yeah.
From France. Help me out. If you were going to have a conversation with someone politically, how would that change? Like, would that be any different from homeopathic stuff?
Well, for the political stuff, I think it looks much harder. I don't know why, but I don't know. For politics, it seems like it's much harder to prove to someone that he hasn't really used the good method to build his opinion. Mm. I don't know why. I don't know what's the real difference. Maybe you thought about that.
Yeah, I would say like a person's probably a lot more personally attached to their political identity than they would be to something they think makes them feel better or is healthier. And I think that's even more of a challenge. If anything, the minefield becomes more complex when it comes down to like a political belief based on what someone really, really thinks other people should do rather than what just they should do. But I still think the approach is more or less the same. You just maybe need to take a more focused approach where you don't try to get distracted by, you know, political topics or other groups, but stay focused on their epistemology that leads them to think that why they think this, you know, policy change or this particular candidate will actually improve the quality of life of people under him or not, or her, right?
Okay. But I had another problem with politics. So
go for it.
For example, about your belief in God.
Well, go for it.
There is no, if someone believes in God, you know, well, he has no data for that. He has no evidence normally, or it's really weird evidence. I don't know. But for politics, lots of people have lots of data on lots of phenomena. So it's much harder because they believe they are much more competent.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, guys? Dread Pirate, you want to go first?
No. So somebody else go first.
Doubter five, would you have anything to say about that? Like the consequence of I'll go for it.
No, go ahead. Tell me.
The consequence of, you know, when someone says they believe in a God, they don't really have a lot of evidence to support it, but when they say they have a belief in this candidate, they do have, you know, maybe some census data, maybe they have some polling that was been done, or they can point to economic numbers, bar graphs, charts.
Sure.
Things that are demonstrable in history. What?
Yeah. One of the things is we've never had an example of a God presented to us so we can take attributes from it or question it. And every, you know, 10,000 different Christian religions tells us that, you know, everybody, well, most Christians define God in a different way and read what they want to out of the holy book, and there's no way of honing in on what it's actually like. They'd also be the first one to tell you that all the killing and all the suffering that God caused in the Old Testament isn't the way he is now, and that he also, in the next breath, they say that God is unchanging. So it's there's no consensus to what he's like, depending on who you talk to.
Yeah.
And that's only one God. But people all over the world believe in thousands of gods.
But under a political lens, can someone find data to lead them to an objective truth? And, like, what kind of data would make you convinced that what they're saying is absolutely true?
I would say no, because the information in the Bible...
No, political.
Oh, political.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you could.
You could?
Well, yeah, if you go to the data of what they've said in their past speeches, what they've said in their research and their publications, then you could get an idea of where they stand politically on the on topics at hand. Also, you could go to the reports that have been written about them by other news outlets and see what they say about them, and you could get a good idea about their character then. Hmm. And what their views on. So yeah, you could, I mean, if you have writings by the person and opinions posted by other people, then you could get a pretty good idea what a candidate stands for.
So if I can summarize, it sounds like, Larry, you're saying the claim of a God existing versus a claim of a candidate supporting, I don't know, less taxes, are completely different as far as how extraordinary they are. So yeah, the amount of evidence you would need to support that belief likewise would become much less if it's much more of a mundane claim. So if someone's saying, hey, I think, you know, school teachers should be paid more as a platform for why they're running for politics, and they have a history of saying that, and maybe a history of donating towards groups that fight for those kinds of reforms, like that could be
raising money for them.
Yeah, that could be a pretty good piece of evidence that even in an SE conversation, you wouldn't necessarily go out trying to like change someone's mind that no, he's not doing it. You could just be like, I'm open to the evidence of someone fighting for this particular reform. Do you have a good reason to believe that? And if they present that evidence, that's pretty good convincing evidence to make a person be like, hey, actually, I think you do have a good reason to believe that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I'm fine with the concept of someone being absolutely reasonable in an SE conversation. In fact, I think being open to that idea is what makes SE better than debating, because I'm not trying to automatically fight whatever an opponent's saying. I'm really going in with an open mind. And if they have a reasonable reason for what they're saying, I'm fine with it. And I think it's really easy to hit that bar if it's just a policy change compared to, say, if it was a God belief. Dread Pirate, you want to wrap up for like 3 minutes before we go to our half? What's on your mind?
Sure. Well, I would agree with you on the value of SE over debate. I've watched, and I was and still am a big fan of Matt Dillahunty and Dawkins and Sam Harris and all those great debaters. Christopher Hitchens is like a standing hero of mine.
Yeah, right.
But I don't think I could ever emulate that with any huge success. Not that I even find particularly it valuable in trying to, as you say, you know, affect change in other people. I think SE is the way to go for sure. I the more I do it, and the more people in my community learn what's going on with it, the more respect it's gaining, and the more people are coming out to actually participate. So
cool. How about this? We'll come back after the break and delve into some pretty cool political topics, French stuff, and maybe even a couple of baguettes after the break. This is 103.9 FM Wozo Radio, low power, coming out of Knoxville, Tennessee. See you in a short while.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
Welcome back. I'm Dotter 5, and this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is October 20th, and with us on the show today, we have the Wombat.
Yo!
And we have Bob and the Dread Pirate. Say hi.
Hi, 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 hi.
Okay, we're going to talk just a second about the free thought groups you can join here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 17th year. ASK now has 979 members as of this morning.
Nice. Closing
on the 1,000 mark.
Yeah.
And you can find us online and information about the other groups, Rationalists of East Tennessee and the Sunday Assembly and the Secular Student Alliance. All information could be found at KnoxvilleAtheist.org. You can also join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria and the Old City in Knoxville. That's Tuesdays from like 5:30 to 7:30. Everybody's welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. And that's about it for the... we didn't talk about the TV show. It's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it almost every Wednesday between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 and Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvnox.org. You can also find archives of some of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And if you're interested in getting involved in the TV show or the radio show, and you live in East Tennessee, come to the Ask Meetup or RET meeting to talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And back to you, Wombat.
Cool. We're talking internationally on this episode of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour with our friend, Bob, who's from France. T-Vout. Bob, how are you?
Fine. Perfect.
Do you believe in a God? Let's get straight to it.
No. No, I don't.
Why not? Why not? Why don't you believe in a God?
Because I have no evidence. That's a
pretty good reason.
Yeah. And if you had the evidence, would you believe in a God?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
If it's good evidence.
Yeah. We love good evidence here. How did you become an atheist? Like, were you born? Of course you were born that way, but like, were you raised in a religion and then got out of it?
Yeah. No, actually, yeah, I was raised a Catholic.
Boom!
A Catholic, yeah.
Game of Thrones actually, logic. I'm telling you, guys, it's a real thing. All right, go for it. Sorry.
Yeah, because, so France has no religion, but the town where I came from, it's Strasbourg, and it was German, like, between the two wars. So there are some specific laws in my town. That are not applied in the rest of France.
Oh, okay.
And so that's kind of weird. I don't know why it's that way, but I guess it's too late to change it now, because the first politician that changed that will lose all of his voters in our area. But in our area, the priests are paid by the state.
Wow.
And I was raised in a Catholic school as well. So, yeah. I was a hard Catholic, actually. And, but then I guess, during my studies, in college, well, I don't know. I just learned a lot about lots of things. I read Dawkins. I read, a lot of intellectuals like that. And, smoothly I became less and less convinced that there was a God, actually.
Help me out. How convinced were you at the time? And this might be a weird, nuanced question, but like, how confident were you that a God existed before you went to college? Say, like, from a scale from 0 to 100%, like, how confident would you have been? Like, if I said, hey, confident are you God exists? You'd be like, I'm 100%, or like 80%, or like, I had some questions, but I mean, how Catholic were you?
Well, it's hard to answer because I guess that at the time, I didn't even know that you could, like, assess your confidence in a belief. So I would have answered 100% for sure. You know, I just found out, like, 2 years ago that actually it's okay to say 80% sure and so on.
Sure, yeah. Like, I had no doubt that the God
was exactly.
There.
Yeah.
When did
because everybody said, though.
When did you... Yeah. Right. When did you go from, say, 100 to, like, that first 99, if you can recall that at all? Like, when was the door cracked open for you? Like, you had the absolutist closed position. When did it crack open a little bit?
And what happened then?
Yeah.
Well, that's a hard question. Because, I was a Catholic, but, you know, my religion was not that important in my life. Right. So I wasn't talking to everybody about it and so on. So it was just a smooth process, I'd say. And I cannot remember the exact time when I changed my mind.
Okay. Wow. So it was more of like a surprise for you when you realized I actually don't believe this as much anymore? Was that like shocking?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd say I noticed that when friends of mine told me that they didn't believe in God. I'd say when I was like 18 years old, 20, and I thought, well, why not? That's okay. You know, I was not shocked by that.
I think that's really what it means to so like when I say there's value in being open with atheism, I think that is basically it, because you could have people who are, you know, originally convinced that they're 100% and then just don't give it as much thought, go through their lives and realize, ah, there's a lot of different people, a lot of different conclusions out there. And then they just need to be, but they're surrounded by people who always say they believe, so they never give it the time to critically think about why they believe themselves. And all it takes is one good friend to be like, yeah, actually don't. I don't. Yeah, exactly. I don't. It's like, oh yeah, I don't either, because now I have time to think about it.
So really, the first real chink in your God belief was when you met somebody who didn't believe. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
That was the same with me in college. Mm. That was nearly 50 years ago. But that's the one that got me started thinking that, you know, non-belief was actually an option.
Exactly. And that's why I think, like, hey, if you're on the fence, or if you don't believe in a God, but you don't like the A label, I mean, that's fine too. But at least, you know, express where you're at. There's a way to do that. I think street epistemology is a great way for that. But if you don't want to even go through there, just at least joke around with it so that people know where you're at on the religious spectrum, just so they know it's an option, just so that they know, hey, my friend is also on this side of the scale. And it's not just this group of corrupt people that want to kick babies and burn kittens. It's actually like, you know, like my grocer or my teacher or my close friend, like, or my wife or my future girlfriend, you know, like all these things are, all these people color what atheism actually is. And I think that's an important reason why we should, you know, be more open about having these religious conversations. Sure. Mm-hmm. Dread Pirate, where do you feel? I know you told us how you became atheist a while back ago, but do you find any parallels with this story of like, hey, I didn't even realize when I became an atheist?
Well, you know, I agree with the idea that we don't choose our beliefs, that they happen over time and as a consequence of a whole bunch of stuff. So to say I woke up one morning not believing in God.
Right.
Would be sort of contrary to my understanding of how we formulate beliefs in the first place.
Right. So, I remember when I probably told the story before, but it was like morality was for me when I took a class in morality in college, and I thought I knew what it was, but it turned out apparently morality is not just a list of 10 rules that some guy brought down from a mountain. And you're like, oh man, this is like a whole on system that can answer really complex things that we're constantly improving. Mm-hmm. Let me go back to my Bible and see where that is, because I must have just skipped over it. And I realized, oh, it's not in here at all. And not only that, but there's punishment if you don't follow the list of 10 rules some guy brought down from a mountain. You're like, well, let me just stop reading this part of the Bible because it's clearly outdated. Let me just stick to the New Testament and I'll be totally fine. And then the New Testament's like, no, honor these old laws. Remember Moses' stuff. We're like, oh, geez, but what are some other better things? And then it was like, some things like the golden rule of like, hey, you should treat others how you want to be treated. But like, what about treating people how they want to be treated too? Like, isn't that important as well to an extent? And I realized that I was critiquing the Bible as if I had a better source of information of how to treat people and conduct myself.
Absolutely.
And I started relying on that system more and more and less on the Bible. And before I knew it, I was basically like, I only read Proverbs, and even when I read Proverbs, I'm like, oh, that's dumb. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. It's like, what water is always wet because it's water. I'm like, that means nothing. That means nothing. I'm not getting religiously filled. This is dumb. I'd rather just read like a science book or a comic book or something.
Yeah.
Or Shakespeare.
Yeah. At that point, I was like, you know what? I don't think I need to read this Bible anymore. And at that point, I already felt like I don't need to be religiously affiliated. But I didn't know what atheism was. So I'm like, what am I now? I'm just not religiously affiliated with anything. What is this? So yeah, it was a surprise for me too. We realized that, oh, atheism believes that? That's what I believe. Oh no. Oh no, I'm an atheist. What am I supposed to do now?
So, or humanism.
So that leads us to the next really cool question. Like, so when you found out you were an atheist, like, is it hard coming out as one to your family, like in Strasbourg or in France in general?
Well, actually not. In France, it's absolutely okay not to believe in a God. So there was really no judgment. And that's why I said it's really personal. Everybody there, I'd say that lots of French are relativists. So everybody can think what he wants, and so that's okay.
But even your parents were okay with it?
Well, yeah, they were the same. It's the first time I talk about that with someone, so I'm thinking things through, and yeah, they were okay, actually.
How did that conversation go, if you don't want me prying in? Like, did you actually literally have to tell your parents, hey, by the way, I'm not Catholic anymore? Like, were they still Catholic at the time? Like, did they care? Did they talk to you about it? Like, how'd that go?
Well, it's a little complicated, actually. I'd rather not talk about it.
That's fair.
Okay. Thanks.
I remember when I came out as an atheist to my mom, it was maybe like the week after she already stopped being a Christian herself and became a Jehovah's Witness. And a Jehovah's Witness, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but it's, Okay, great. It saves me some time. But, when she became a Jehovah's Witness, it was a shock to me because at that time I was still kind of Christian. I was still not like reading the Bible, but like her leaving that church gave me a really good opportunity for me to at least just say, hey, and this is where I'm at too. I'm also not a Christian, but I'm also not going with you on that Jehovah's Witness route. All the power to you. I love you, but this is where I'm at. And I think if she was still a Christian at the time, it would have been a much harder conversation. But the fact that she left Christianity, or at least Baptist, subsect of Judaism, it was just much easier conversation. So, like, if anything, it was a godsend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I know some people who kept being an atheist to themselves for a very, very long period of time. I think even Doubter 5 was in the closet atheist for a long period of time.
For a long time, 30 years.
Yeah.
That
must have been hard.
Until 9/11 happened. Yeah. And I came out that year.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, I'm glad that you're out. That's the main thing. Like, I'm glad you're on the other side and you're reaching out to other groups.
The thing about coming out or not coming out as an atheist, the people that you know assume you're a Christian.
Yes.
And that may include other atheists who are also in the closet. Mm. And until you come out, you don't know. And it's hard to make other atheist friends until you actually say you are one.
Exactly. You really don't even have, when you're in the closet, you think everyone around you isn't Christian too. And I remember at my last job, until I told people I was an atheist, like openly, that's when I realized, most of the people here are atheists too. And I never even realized it. Like, I would say, like, now I can start counting the Christians on my fingers. Like, out of like 40 people that work here, it's only 3. Yeah. I thought it was like the grand majority of the people here. Now I'm realizing,
Where do you work? At the atheist, American atheist or something?
Yeah, no. And I just worked at a science lab. And you'd be surprised when I was in grad school, it wasn't necessarily atheist or not atheist. It was just religion. There were Hindus, there were, Buddhists there. There was all sorts. We had some sheiks.
Right.
We had Christians and a variety of different Christian groups there. But like, I felt like I was the odd one out as being an atheist, but I just wasn't as open about it. And when I finally was at work, it was just like an eye-opening experience. Yeah. So
we need to come out if we can.
Yeah.
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 In Canada, is it the similar thing?
Yes.
Like, have you, now that you came out in your town, I as a like as an open Pastafarian.
Yep.
Did you have anybody be like, oh yeah, that's cool, I take that, I like, this is where I'm at too? And it's like, oh, my consensus of where I thought everybody was is a lot different now that I'm on this side of the fence. Like, if that's the question didn't make sense, let me know.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what you're looking for.
Did you find that there are more free-minded people?
Yes,
after you've hopped the fence.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, and this is the great thing about the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, is because it is about community. Hmm. And it allows people sort of an opportunity to, kick ideas around a little bit and do it in a sort of a lighthearted manner without, insulting anyone else's beliefs. Hmm. Or sort of being strident as atheists, we can have fun. We can enjoy each other's company. We can enjoy our participation in the community, and people just sort of have that understanding that we're not subscribing to the typical Christian God, without being aggressive about it.
Exactly. What I love about like these kinds of free-minded atheist groups is that they tend to be open to everybody, including religious groups as well. So like if you go to Barley's Tap Room Pizzeria, I think, was it on Thursdays?
Tuesdays
in Knoxville, in Old Town Knoxville. When I went there for the first time, it's like these series of long tables. Think of like Skyrim-esque long tables in like Viking countries. And lining up and down are groups of people happily chatting and eating food. And you sit down and you think, oh, these are a bunch of atheists. I'm going to talk about atheism with them. No, sometimes you might encounter like really, really deep believers who are just interested in talking with atheists, trying to get inform their perspective a little bit. And I love the idea that, you know, like in a group setting where it's like, hey, we don't have a horse in the race. We're here to have a conversation versus like, you know, a potluck where it's just Catholics or it's just Baptists. You're like, hey, if you don't believe this, you're not invited here. You get that feeling a lot more than you would at like a secular setting. And I just really like the appeal of, hey, we're here to talk to everybody about anything. And I like
that. I tell people I guarantee good conversation if they come to our meeting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And that search for community is really important too. Like,
Like
we say this every show, if you feel like you're the only atheist in your town, one, you're not alone, and two, you're wrong. Which is and hey, even if you don't want to go out and like eat with people, you know, because I don't know, sanitary or whatever issues are going on there. Like maybe you just like, I just don't like watching people eat. Hey, there you go. Guess what? We got a thing called the internet, and you can have really, really cool conversations with a whole bunch of groups if you're just willing to reach out. This is one of them, and I like to think it's a really good opportunity for people to reach out if they're interested on join a community of, you know, free thinkers. If you, like, for example, Bob just reached out to me on Messenger. It was just like, hey, I'd like to talk to you about anything, maybe SC-related. It was like, cool, let's go on the show and we can talk. And
that was great. Thanks.
Yeah. It's cool. It's not hard to join a community. It really isn't. How about this? Before we head out, I have a weird question. Could you tell me some weird things about France? So that way, like, just general trivia, cool things to start a conversation with. Like, say we do say Dread Pirate Larry and I, we all go up to you know, Strasbourg, or if we go up to Paris. How could we like blend in and have like a really nice, you know, couple of trivia points to bring up to start up a really nice conversation that can
That's a great question. Yeah. Well, first of all, maybe you should be thoughtful of the way you dress.
Okay.
Because we're in France after all, so maybe you wear a scarf, something like that, you know, look cool. That's important.
Scarves are cool, got it.
Well, yeah, the berets are outdated, actually.
Oh, okay. So am I.
Be careful.
So that's how you tell a tourist.
Oh, snap.
Yeah.
Berets are out of style.
Yeah, sure. And I don't know, what kind of trivia are you looking for?
Yeah, actually? Like, what's a good way to start a conversation with someone in France? Like, how could I go about that? You've seen some of the stuff on my channel. I like to make a connection as early as possible. How can I do that with someone from France?
Well, that's a great question. Okay. Well, I think it's much harder to do that in France, actually, than in the US. Because in France, people don't really talk on the streets with other people. So I'm kind of stuck there, because if you have the answer, I take it as well. But
all the outdoor cafes, you don't just sit down and then start talking to the people on the next table.
Yeah.
You could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah, maybe just talk to them about food. Everybody loves food.
Sure. Or the service.
Yeah, exactly. Because, sure. Because the service is bad in France.
The service especially is bad in France.
If you go to Paris. Well, the servers will not be nice. They won't smile at you. So that's a good way to start a conversation. Just complain about the
tipping. That can be great. Tipping isn't a thing in France. Is that accurate?
No, yeah, not really.
Okay,
no,
that explains why they're angry. You guys can fix that.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
You can, but it's
well,
not.
Well, no wonder the servers are
so exactly.
Sorry.
They're just like, this isn't fun.
Yeah, maybe.
He wants a refill on water? Excuse you.
Yeah.
If you're in France as an American tourist, what are some like do's and don'ts? What would you recommend is like the top three do's and the top three don'ts?
Great question.
Because I don't want to break any social faux pas. Oh, there you go, France. I don't want to break any faux pas while I'm doing SC. So, like, what would be some like three things I should do, three things I should make sure I never do?
Wow. Okay, cool question. I'm just, I don't know.
Try for one of each, anyway.
Try for one. Yeah, top one. Sure. Whatever comes to mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I'd say don't talk about religion, but that's the problem.
Much for LP.
Yeah, exactly.
Challenge accepted. All right.
Yeah. And maybe just don't talk about American fast foods, you know, McDonald's and so on. We don't really, like them here.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I can imagine.
And what's something that we should do? Like, what's something that you would recommend that we would say or do?
Oh, to talk about French.
Yeah.
Love talking about politics. So.
Oh, really?
Maybe just. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Sure. Oh. Yeah. They do. So maybe just read the names of the current candidates in this or that election and talk with them about that.
Cool. Or complain about Trump. That would do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Complain about Trump. That's great. Yeah.
There we go.
That's true.
Speaking of politics, we do have a convention coming up in Nashville called Politicon. I'll be up there with Anthony Magnabosco and Reed Nice Wonder. We're going to be doing SC with random people about politics and deeply held beliefs. My strategy is try not to know anything about politics when I go in there, because I want to see if it's possible to have these conversations with as least biased as possible. So I've caught up myself on video game news and like, that's it. So we'll see. Like, hey, I believe in this policy. It's like, cool. I shouldn't have to be educated on your conclusion to know if you're using a reliable strategy to reach that conclusion. Mm-hmm. Like those, right? So I'm trying to just go in there with as little bias as possible, but it will be the first time Reed and Anthony and myself will all be in one same place. So I'm really excited to have that opportunity.
Wow.
Cool.
Anything else? Hey, Dread Pirate, do you have any closing words?
I just am looking forward to starting this thing called Skeptics in the Pub.
Ooh, talk to me.
Next couple of weeks. So, you know, I'm going to continue with Chats Over Coffee, of course, for the one-on-one. But I'm interested in getting people who may each individually have interesting and not well justified beliefs, sitting around a table talking about, like, we'll pick a subject each week.
I dig it.
And then just have different people come at it and, you know, sort of a group SE thing.
Yeah, I really dig it.
How do you go about recruiting people for that, to get people?
I would just poster and you know, stick it on the on Facebook and whatnot.
Okay, so you don't have a sign set up in front on your table in the pub.
You know, I've got a sandwich board that I'm going to be using for Chats Over Coffee. So, and it's just got a little slip thing that I can just pull in and pull out the poster. So, I think wherever I end up setting up, I can just have that as a sandwich board outside and just say, hey, it's Skeptics in the Pub Day or whatever.
So you get permission from the pub owner?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
They're already good friends.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Very good.
Bob, do you have any closing words that you'd like to say for the show? T-Bow.
Oh,
Bob,
sorry.
That's you. that's Bob, me. Who's that?
My bad. Yeah. So thanks for everything. I'm going to try street epistemology this month.
Nice.
In Strasbourg. And, actually, there is something really funny. And, well, in Strasbourg, there is a theology university. So the study of God.
Okay.
The college.
Okay.
So
which God?
Exactly.
Catholic. Of course.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, I don't know. And so I might try to talk with them, and I'm eager to see how that goes.
Cool.
Okay, very good.
And I'll follow up with just, hey, I don't think there's anything as far as off-limit topic as far as conversation goes. It's just a question of how can we have that kind of conversation? And there might be a really good way to do it. And what we try to do in as far as like SC is concerned is just try to discover these cool ways to have conversations about things that we thought were originally impossible conversations to have. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe that we can talk to anyone about anything. Yes. Larry, you want to close out the show? What's your final thoughts?
I think we need to do one other thing first real quick.
Go
around the table and ask if anybody has a website or something.
Oh, my bad, my bad. You're right. Yeah. Drip Pirate, what's your show? Talk to me. What's this Chats Over Coffee thing?
So if you want to... Oh, geez, I should make up a channel. I have a channel, which is Mind Pirate.
But, yeah.
That's on YouTube. If ever anyone wants to connect through the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster... We have a Facebook page, a group, which is the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster of British Columbia.
Nice.
And that is a connection to all things Pastafarian.
Cool.
Very cool.
And you said Mind Pirate. How do you spell that? I'll put it in the description.
MindPyrate.
Look at this guy. He's got that double Y going on. Mind Pirate. The link's in the description. It's called Chats Over Coffee. It's really great. Bob, do you have a channel or something that you think you'll post to in the future?
Not yet. I'll start a channel one day, but not yet.
Cool. And you can find me on Let's Chat. Just Google Let's Chat or put it into YouTube. You'll find me top of the list. Larry, you got anything for us?
This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WZO 103.9 LPFM. So go to digitalfreethought.com. And click on the blog button to read my articles and listen to the history of this show.
Nice.
We have 150 now radio shows that we've archived at digitalfreethought.com.
Cool.
And for final words, remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that souls and heavens and hells are real. Until, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life.
Bye. Cool.
That's it. Have a good week.
Yay.
Bye.
You've been listening to Digital Free Thought.